You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? Kicking like motherfucking Karate Kid up in this bitch, man.
Ball down. Yeah. The movie's called Blue Crush. It's about girls who surf in Hawaii. And one of the girls meets a football player. It's a takeoff off the Bananarama song, Cruel Summer. Those of you that are familiar with it. So, joining me, though, it's a big day for us. He's been gone for a few days. The Gunner is back with us. Mike, what's going on, man? How are you? Wait, what happened? Oh, yeah, it would help if I plugged him in.
I'm not plugged in.
Sorry about that. Oh, man, I gave you the big intro and everything, man. I hate when that happens. Oh, you did?
I can hear it, yeah. It's muffled, so I knew I wasn't on.
All right. Well, sorry about that. So, where you been? What have you been doing?
Well, I went to the doctors. I had to visit the doctors, you know, and play that game again. And then they don't know what's going on yet, but going to have a bunch of tests done. So,
what is your deal? You're like always involved with the doctors now.
I know. Well, because I wasn't involved with them when I was on active duty. That's the fucking problem.
So,
the one thing I could tell people is
you that
don't
guy?
Don't put off shit, man. Don't. Go see people.
Go see people? Come on. Nobody goes and sees people. You don't see the rest of us going to the doctor. Schwartz went to the doctor. He had cancer. So, yeah, maybe Mike's right. You should go to the doctor more. But, yeah, but the rest of us don't go. Rudy went. Remember Rudy?
Yeah.
Remember Rudy when he thought he was dying? He thought he was dying when he was going to go have his colonoscopy?
Oh, yeah, and then he enjoyed it so much, now he's on this colonoscopy kick.
Exactly. He called up driving to Big Bear, and he was like, euphoric, his like post-near-death experience euphoria. He was ecstatic about his colonoscopy. Oh, it was awesome.
Guys got to get one.
Yeah.
We'll get one for fun.
you're now our guy. You're that guy now. You're the guy who's, and I'll tell you what, not only are you going to the doctor, but now you're done with the NFL, right?
Yeah, I'm done. Done.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done too. I didn't watch last weekend. And I'm just sick of it. I don't turn that shit on to watch political statements. It's a form of escapism. I would feel about it the same way that I would feel about the cast of the play Hamilton, right? Jamming their political thoughts in my face the night I went to see that play. I would write and say, I'm not going again, ever.
I used to watch the TV series, American Horror Story, because it was kind of entertaining. And then they went political.
American Horror Stories?
Yeah,
what's that about?
FX. It was an FX. It was just kind of like this freaky stories, but they went political, you know. So their first episode was dealing with the election of Trump, you know, and like this one mad Trump supporter, and then just like shit, man. Can't you escape this stuff? I mean, what's going on?
You can't. You can't escape it. And it just gets stupider and stupider. The problem the NFL has, though, like when Don Trump locks horns with you, he doesn't give it up. Right?
No. And
he'll be tweeting. He'll be tweeting from his casket about the NFL.
Yeah. Well, and people are asking, you know, the DirecTV NFL package, they're asking for a refund.
I know.
You know. So they're turning it out, man. Good for them.
Yeah. So you know it gets serious when the sponsors start calling the NFL and saying Budweiser calls up and says, "Hey, you better put an end to this shit. We're not paying the billions of dollars we're paying for this nonsense."
Well, has any of the sponsors stepped in and said, "Hey, stop this nonsense"?
I read a story about one of, let's see, There's a guy in Cleveland, check into Cash founder and Cleveland and Tennessee native Alan Jones went into the ongoing NFL national anthem protest Tuesday night. Jones posted on his Facebook page that he is pulling all commercials for Check into Cash, Buy Here, Pay Here USA, and USA Money Shops during NFL games for the rest of the season.
Good.
For 29 states we operate in, this isn't much to them, but it's a lot to us. Our group, the Tombras Group, is our ad agency in Knoxville and our national media buyer for both TV and radio. And don't look for hard work on the NFL either. Our companies will not condone unpatriotic behavior. Taking a stand, not a knee! Exclamation mark.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, you know, and you can say, look, and I said the other day, look, we know it's our First Amendment, right? That's not the issue. The issue is with the NFL, you have a ton of money, and you have 7 days a week you have access to the media. If you want to do something about the problem, you have everything you need to do something. But you don't want to do anything, you just want to offend us. Now, there can be people that say that they're not offended, and that's fine, but it offends me.
Yeah, it offends me.
It offends me. And so what I want you to do is I want you to go make a difference. A lot of people feel strongly about this, and they have no recourse. They have no money, and they have no access to the media. You got it both in spades. So I don't want to see you protest on Sunday. I want to see you do something about the problem. But that's not in the cards. So you know what? You're dead to me. That's how I feel. So anyway.
Yeah, I'm done with them.
Let's talk about the Vietnam series. You say you've caught up to it?
Yeah, now I'm caught up.
And?
Yeah, so now, you know, God, it makes me so angry, you know, and I wasn't there. I wasn't affected by the Vietnam War. I was too young, but you know, and to know that my dad went through all that, and then to see these truths come out of how bad the lie was, you know, and the McNamara papers, you know, I was just watching last night where the McNamara papers were leaked out, and you're like, oh, for good God. I mean, it's unfathomable to me to understand that what if Vietnam never happened? What if we walked in there and we didn't get involved? You know, just imagine the how different the world would be today.
No, and you get to, and I want to say one of the things that struck me was there's a clip, I want to say it's in the third or the fourth episode, where Carl Marlantis says, I can forgive them for making a policy mistake. But, you know, you go back and you read that, like, in 1964, 65, McNamara knew that we were not going to win there. And then by the end of 1965, the start of 1966, there had been 2,000 people killed in Vietnam.
Right.
So the next 56,000 didn't have to happen. That's the big number. And that's just Americans. The loss of life on the Vietnamese side?
2 million.
Yeah. That didn't have to happen either. And then you see last night, in fact, somebody wrote me a letter, an email this morning. It said, when they spoke of the last Christmas bombing, were something like 35 B-52s and 11 other aircraft were shot down, my heart sank. Who the hell wants to fly those missions knowing all the risk for nothing? The video of the B-52 going down in flames is chilling.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but what was the other thing that I was watching? It's nauseating to watch. And then you hear, Mike, how about listening to the audio tapes between Johnson and McNamara and then Nixon and Kissinger about, you know, what do we do? And then Nixon's just a straight up crook.
Yeah, he was a criminal. A straight up
criminal. about breaking in and we're going to ruin this guy in the press and we're going to, you know, you need to break in there and you need to find out and you need to get that stuff.
Well, getting involved in the, you know, going as a candidate
right.
for President of the United States and then talking to Hanoi about not releasing the, you know, holding
right.
American lives just so you can get elected.
Right. And then, then McGovern did the same thing. Right.
Yeah. But got caught.
Yeah, got caught. And it's just slick.
That's why they call him Slick Willie, yeah.
Yeah.
Tricky dick.
Yeah. Yeah, and so should we, Mike, and then when I lay there and watch it, I shut it off two nights ago. I was like, I got to go to bed. This is too depressing. And now I watched the rest of it yesterday morning, and I watched last night. But it's heavy stuff. But then we did it again in Iraq.
Yeah, we did.
We recast the Secretary of Defense. Donald Rumsfeld plays Robert McNamara. We have generals who don't stand up and scream, no, we're not doing this. And we have a Secretary of State who's a Vietnam guy who doesn't do his piece by saying, hell no, we're not going there. We're not doing it.
Yeah.
And again, that was 2003. And it's 2017, and we're still there. And we still, and now the problem, here's the problem in Iraq today. We've almost completely ejected, along with the Iranian help with the military, right, and our advisors, blah, 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 blah. We've almost completely ejected ISIS out. Now the attention turns to the Kurds. What do we do about the Kurds? Iraq says there is no sovereign state. Okay, they just held a referendum, like 92% voted for, you know, sovereignty. And now our NATO ally, the Turks, have said, yeah, that dog doesn't hunt. We're not having that. Who's been the most stable part of our presence in Iraq? The Kurds.
To the Kurds.
So now what do? Turn our back on them and do what we did in Vietnam with the French, saying, yeah, we can't really support you because we've got to be on the French side because they're our ally. We've got to support the Turks who are cozying up to the Russians. We got to support them, and then the Kurds get smoked. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, Mike, would you tell people that haven't seen it to watch it?
Yeah, I would just, you know, I'd be really tell you too, to prepare for just, I mean, absolute. I think what was leaving, the thing that it leaves me with is politicians have never changed. You know, you look back at that video and you're like, man, how did Nixon get away with those lies? How? And then when we found out, how come he didn't die in prison? You know, what I think needs to happen is, and the politicians have not changed. They're no different than those crooked politicians. Even Kennedy, everybody, Camelot and Kennedy. Kennedy was a crook.
Kennedy's bullshit.
He was as big as they, if not so, you know, he could have easily stepped away from it. And you see the inexperience that Kennedy almost threw this nation, you know, into global nuclear war over, you know, just, it's just sickening that our government, we allow our government and continue with, you know, they can do whatever they want, pass any laws, work around, lie to the American public, or withhold information, which is just as bad as a lie, isn't it? You know, when you don't tell someone if it's true or not, and you just, they don't even know what's going on. And you're killing Americans. For what reason? To save face?
Yeah, to find an honorable way out.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you look at Nixon. Nixon killed soldiers so he wouldn't look bad and he would get reelected. They're just chips. They're pawns on a chess table. They're expendable.
That, to me, was when he started talking about how important the election was and all of that. That, to me, is just like this this, like getting slugged in the stomach with a sledgehammer.
Like, oh yeah.
Like there's
the lies that they'll wet the weave just to stay in power, just to stay elected.
Because it's so important.
And you know, again, not just LBJ and Nixon and Kennedy and no. You know, shit, Eisenhower. All these Democratic senators and legislators, you know, and cabinet people just, I mean, how does the President of the United States get away with hiring a group of thugs called the burglars and then talking to the head burglar and telling him, I want you to get into the Brookings and get into that safe and get those documents? No, Carol, just do it. The President of the United States telling people to break into a business and steal from their safe.
The plumbers.
Oh, the plumbers, yeah.
Right.
Like,
right.
How in the world? How? If you and I did that, we'd end up in prison instantly. You know, it's just, I don't understand. I just don't get it.
Let me read you.
Where is the check and the balance?
They check each other. How about that? They check and balance each other. That make you feel
good? Yeah, they check and balance themselves.
that make you feel good?
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, like that same thing. You're the banker, the accountant, and the spender.
Yeah. Like on Petticoat Junction. When you roll into, like, you get off the train at Petticoat Junction and you walk in, and Uncle Joe's standing there, and they're like, I want to talk to the mayor. And Uncle Joe says, hold on one second. And he's like the head of the railroad. And then he bends over and he comes up and he's got a coat on that says mayor on it. He says, what can I do for you? He says,
yeah.
Well, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk, is the sheriff around? Hold on. Bends over, puts a star on his coat. What do you need? It's right. That's the same group with the checks and balances. I don't know. I'll tell you, I would agree with you. If you haven't watched it and you're going to start, it's depressing. And it's not simply depressing for what guys, Mike, would you, I made this statement. I don't know if you were around, but there is no greater generation than the Vietnam generation. No.
Yeah, now I'm convinced. Yeah. What World War II guys went through, that was a great generation. Don't get me wrong. What they did, very patriotic, but the Vietnam guys are far more in the category of the greatest generation of people to go to war, to fight a war with the country, the fabric of the country falling apart, and to come back and be treated the way they were.
And to
go on with their lives.
And to hang with it.
And to hang with it. And suck it up.
And go become our coaches, our teachers.
Yeah. Their ticker tape parade didn't come until, 30, 40 years later.
Yeah.
Most of them, you know, passed away.
Right.
And now we're just coming to in the last 10 years, if anything, what this war has done, the Afghanistan war and the war in Iraq, is emphasize the patriotic call for, you know, patriots, soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen. You know, and then it elevated the Vietnam guys.
Right.
It put them back in the spotlight. If anything, you know what? Then it's worth it. It's worth the sacrifices that we all did to get those guys the recognition that they deserve.
You know,
to me,
you don't say
that's it.
You don't say very many smart things on this program. That might be the smartest thing you've ever said on this program.
Yeah, that's the sacrifice. Watching this, the sacrifice that I made, the deployments that I made, the injuries that I received, the time away from my family, you know what? It was worth every second, every minute of it, to give my father and my family, my uncles, everybody that served in Vietnam, the recognition that they duly deserve. And so,
if you hear
Iraq War, Afghanistan War worth it? Absolutely. Was it worth the death? Absolutely. I would have died for that cause. That's a just cause. I can live with that.
If you hear those guys talk, and my therapist, a Vietnam guy, right, he said that when one of the first parades that Vietnam vets got invited to, what do you think their reaction was the first time? Like, yeah, we don't need that.
Yeah, this is a setup. Well, it's a setup.
It's a setup. Like, you know, everybody's going to be cheering, and then we're going to come around the corner, and then everybody's going to get quiet and just kind of look at us. Like, oh, look at these ragtag, drug addict, you know, baby killer people. And so these, you know, it wasn't that big of a group, but they went down and marched in the parade. And he said, when we heard the ovation, when we kind of came around the corner, he said, everybody starts crying, right? And then we're telling guys, like, the next parade, we get invited to another parade. And we're telling guys, no, you got to go. And they're like, no, nah, man. And they're like, no, you won't believe it. And they said it was such a healing thing, the public reaction to them. And then after the parade, you know, when they'd be standing around, people coming up to them, they were like, you know, this has taken 30-plus years to have happen. But, oh, my God, it's amazing. And then also that the way younger veterans come up to them and talk to them and the respect they get treated with, he said it blew us away. He said because it just wasn't part of our experience. We never got treated like that. We didn't know
but
that.
But, Mac, it's so disheartening to know, again, that, I mean, I have friends here that served in Vietnam, you know, that go to church with me and everything else, and they, they saw some bad things, you know. And to know, though, that it was only 5-10 years ago that they can now proudly wear T-shirts that say U.S. Army or U.S. Marine Corps or and put license plates on their cars and that denote their service to this country. It's sickening to me that only now and then that they're getting the recognition. That's, like I said, it was very emotional for me watching some of these shows. I had to turn it off and go outside.
Yeah.
And just you know, stare off into the horizon, because, you know, to know that, you know, again, my parents, these people were my parents, you know, and my parents' peers, and that they had to go through something like that. And, you know, I was kind of angry at first when I was watching the whole anti-war activist part where the military guys came back and joined the anti-war movement and then went to Washington, D.C. and threw their medals, you know. I was kind of angry about that because, you know, I don't care what you think. You know, we joke about it.
Right.
The decorations that I received, I earned them, you know, and I'm pretty proud of them, you know. And when I'm gone and moved away, it's the things that we laugh about, you know, the I Love Me walls, the things that you look at. Those are the memorabilia that you still have today that showed what your service was like. It kind of denotes what kind of person you were. And I'm kind of proud of the fact that, you know, my daughter takes interest in my medals.
Right.
And my decorations and my things that hang on the walls, you know, and I know that, like I said, when I'm gone, that she'll treat that stuff with respect. And then, you know, she'll tell a story to people, that she meets later in her life about her father through these things too. She didn't know me as Mike, as a Marine. She knew me as a father. Right?
Right.
So they're disconnected in that aspect. So, that's why I say I was kind of torn. I was angry at these guys. I was like, you know, you have no honor. But then I came back and I was like, no, I understand what you were going through at the time. And I think it took real courage to do that. You know, that to me was real courage. You know, to stand up and for something that you bled in and you had lost friends in and then you turned against it. I mean, that's a pretty difficult decision to make, and we didn't make it any better for them, you know, as a nation. We forced them into that. So, you know, that's where, and it's sad to see, you know, a lot of these activist groups, these hate violent groups. So there were good, I believe, you know, there's good protest groups that were very, very good at protesting the war, but in a nonviolent way, in a very peaceful manner. And those were great organizations. Like, you know, you look at Martin Luther King for civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
What Martin Luther King did for civil rights was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But you have these hate groups, you know, that to me, like Black Lives Matter, they're not a Martin Luther King type of organization.
Yeah, to me, ratcheting up the hate doesn't get you closer to a solution. You know, it's like I feel with the NFL, you know, you guys have everything to, you know, to, you have a forum. You have it 7 days a week. You could do anything you want to. You have the money. You know, why don't you make a difference? Why don't you call on your owners to get together and fund something that creates dialogue? Why don't, you know, the things that we've talked about, why don't you do that? Why don't you do that? You know, anybody can take an E. Shit.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mike, going back to the let me read you a couple of emails here. This is from Bob Nielsen. Gunner, if you think that show pisses you off, think what it does to Vietnam vets.
Yeah.
But God, we needed this, and we need more combat vets to run for office. 9 out of 10 times I visited wounded at Walter Reed in Bethesda, the wounded stood up or tried to thank me as a Vietnam vet. All I said was I was a Marine in Vietnam in 66, 67. I was blown away. And Bob has said that repeatedly on the program. About you know, the treatment that Vietnam veterans have received because of, and you're right, and again, it dawned on me the other night I don't know what we were talking about, but the term greatest generation came up, and I said there's been no generation tried in this country, at least to my knowledge, like the Vietnam generation of veterans.
Oh no, absolutely.
And they were my coaches, you know. They were guys that, you know, were in my neighborhood, and they come home. And Marlanus, I mean, you know, his story about coaching soccer or something, sports with another guy for 12 years before he goes home, and his wife said, "Hey, do you know that he was a Marine in Vietnam too?"
Yeah.
And Marlanus says, "No, I didn't know that." That's how deep they bury their shit. Just wasn't discussed.
Yeah.
That's substantial. The other thing that you know makes me cry is seeing the POW just a pitch.
Did they come home?
Oh shit, man! I'm on the couch last night crying watching that. I don't, and Mike and I have talked about this before, but you know how terrifying it is to hug your daughter. And you try not to let your heart betray you know what you're thinking, or your body betray what you're thinking. But, you know, in your mind, you don't know if you'll ever hug her again. You don't know if you'll ever smell her hair again. And you try to put that out of your memory, but it's your mind, but it's terrifying when you go through that, let alone to do it again and again. And we talked about it, but in my opinion, it's the most terrifying and the most unpleasant part of deploying repeatedly. And you live in fear of it, or at least I did, the weeks, you know, before it happens, knowing that you're going to have to do it, and I'm going to try not to cry this time, you know, but I'm scared shitless that, you know, I could get hit just as easily as anybody else. We've all seen, you know, how fucked up the God who governs a flight of metal through the air is. And it could land on anybody. It could ricochet off something and hit you and kill you. And so that's a real fear. And they're the most precious things in the world to you. And to see these guys who were in prison, who probably had their lives flashed before their, you know, before themselves, you know, on dozens of occasions, and to see the absolute joy on those tarmacs, the look on their face as their kids, you know, and their wife run towards them, you know, I'm a straight up pussy for that stuff, man. I'm sitting there crying,
well,
like,
yeah, I was getting really choked
man.
Up when
that's wow.
When Hal Kushner,
yeah.
You know, the doctor that was in prison. And when his comment, he said that he'd been in captivity for 2-3 years, and then he said, "I closed my eyes and I thought of my wife and my daughter, and I couldn't see their face anymore."
Right.
Oh, man, I had to pause the TV. I mean, and do the, you know, make sure no one was looking at me, kind of like.
My allergies are acting up.
Tired.
Yeah,
getting
my eyes watering.
Getting really tired.
Oh, dry air. No, it's brutal. And you know what those guys went through. So, yeah, it's not – and you know what? It's funny because it seems like the last two nights it's gotten much heavier with as a protest. You know, and here's the other thing. How the fuck, as a National Guardsman, could you shoot somebody?
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's not like those guys at Kent State were fighting for their lives. That those the protesters were, you know, they were hand-to-hand combat, right? They
right.
were on top of a hill. And they, you know, with live ammunition. Like, are you shitting me? It's just you try to sit there and get your hands around it, you know, and you sit there with your hands on the side of your head going, who would do that? You know, if you're not in, like, ultimate duress. Like, I could see if you're in the armory and they're lighting it on fire and you're trying to get out and they've barred the door and you're trying to shoot your way through it and they come to confront you. Yeah, your life's at stake. You know, deadly forces, you know, is authorized and justified. But, shit, you see that? Man, oh man, oh man. The other thing I think they've done well to put in context is, you know, some of the iconic things that we all remember from Vietnam. You know, the shooting of that one guy who had just shot, what, eight different people, and he comes around the corner and the Vietnam chief of police, right, he shoots him in the head. You know, they try to put that in context. The video was so powerful. Last night it was the picture of the little girl who had her who had her clothes were on fire and she was running down the road naked. And there's these very classic Vietnam things that they put in context. The other thing I think he's done well is like My Lai does not dominate a program. You know, he talks about
right.
what
yep.
happened, but it doesn't get more weight than other things get, which I think he's done well in terms of keeping balance.
Yeah. No, crazy. Hey, I got this book. My dad gave this book to me. It's nothing but facts. Called Where We Were. Have you heard of it? By Michael P. Kelly.
No.
And it's huge. I mean, it's like a telephone book. And literally, it has everything in there. Every fire base, every hill, every LZ, every named thing that ever happened in Vietnam. And in the very end, it has, like, all the facts. Like, U.S. military casualties by province. You know, so it shows where we suffered the most casualties. And my dad was in Quang Nam province. And during the whole war, they suffered 8,084 casualties in that province. And the closest one ever to that was Haiphong, which is 4,200 people. To give you an example, like, you know, big places that you've heard of.
Right.
Let's see. Pleiku. Pleiku was a province. Pleiku had 1,084 casualties. U.S. military casualties. Number of serving of all branches during the whole war was 8,744,000.
Wow.
During the whole war.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it?
When you 47,378 died in battle, 10,799 died of others in other things. And then you look at the army. Army had 4,368,000 people served. Navy 1,842. U.S. Marines 794,000, U.S. Air Force 1.74 million. Marine Corps suffered in proportion. So the Army had 4.3 million people served. The Army lost 31,000 battle dead. The Navy had 1,600 battle dead. The Marine Corps, with 794,000 people, suffered 13,000 dead.
Higher percentage.
Oh, huge percentage. And then this goes through like campaign periods, awards, major U.S. Army, major Army units, KIAs. So the biggest Army unit that suffered the most KIAs in the combined of all causes in the United States Army was the 1st Cav Division, 5,367. Then the 25th Infantry Division, and then the 101st Airborne Division, and then the 9th Infantry, the 1st Infantry, and then the 1st Aviation Brigade. And then there's a bunch of other big ones. They're smaller numbers. The Maricao, which you saw in that video, only suffered total 773 battle dead.
773, the Maricao Division, which is Cowley's division.
Yeah.
Here's an email. Here's an email for you, Mike. I'm curious to get both your thoughts. Mike, certainly as the Marine that he was, and also the son of a Vietnam veteran, they have a different perspective, as Tim Lynch does, than Mac, I'm sure you do, because they grew up with it in their house. What do you?
No, I didn't grow up in it. My dad didn't talk about it.
What do you think is the lesson of all of this? Mike, do you have a lesson of all of this?
No. I mean, because the lesson would have been to me that you don't trust your government. What kind of fucking lesson is that? You know, the politicians don't give a shit about you. I don't like those lessons.
No, but Mike, they're inescapable, especially as we're talking about, as I lay there on that couch and watch it at night from 8 to 10 every night, I see Iraq, right?
I see exactly the same thing.
And I'm like, fuck, how could we fucking do it again?
Yeah.
That's what I see. And so to me, it's like, you know, it's one thing
if you don't learn about history, you're prone to repeat it in the future, right? But now, you know, you see Rumsfeld, and when that whole Rumsfeld piece where Rumsfeld, you know, after the Twin Towers gets hit, and he goes, all right, let's go after Saddam. You know, like, what?
Yeah.
Hey, Ronnie, come here. Rummy, come in here. Yeah, did you say this? Yeah, I did. You're fired.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, get your shit and get out of here. And don't ever call me again.
It's like he's Dr. Evil. You know what I'm saying? He's got this, he and those neocon idiots have this design of how they're going to refashion the world. Right?
Yeah, that is a sickness that needs to be eradicated. Line those guys up.
And maybe
see how far the bullet goes through.
And maybe that's the lesson. Maybe that's the lesson. You know, is look here. I'll give you a lesson. War is bad. War is bad.
Yeah, war is horrible, man.
Let me tell you.
Hell on earth. Hell on earth.
And it's the least bad to us. It's the least bad to us. The civilians and the combatants where we go, it is what we lost 58. So let's see, 100,000 would be 20 times. They lose 20 times. They lose 40 times what we lose. Think about that. They lose 40 for every one of us. 40 of them. 40 of them die. Maybe 400. Maybe my math is screwed up. But those are the numbers you're playing with. And so the lesson, war is a bad thing, and you should do everything you can not to get involved in them, and you shouldn't do optional ones. Find a better way. Find a better way. Because You know, you see all the stories of all these people whose lives are changed. And then, you know, to me, it's so gut-wrenching to hear our bullshit politicians stand up there and say the shit they say and worry about the shit they worry about, getting reelected. This is just another issue they're dealing with. And you're watching that B-52 fall of the sky in flames, knowing that there's a crew in a B-52 of, what, 13 or some shit like that?
Oh, no, there's not that many. No, there wasn't that many.
Back then?
It was like four or five. Co-pilot, navigator, bombardier, and tail gunner.
Well, I thought there was more in a B-52.
No.
Go ahead, you were going to say something.
I heard a statement once, and it made no sense to me whatsoever until now, until just recently. And the statement was, the lucky ones are the ones that die in war. And it goes on to say something more about, you know, for they don't see, that, you know, for they can't see and they can't feel, they're the lucky ones.
Right. They're spared.
And yeah, and I thought about that for the longest time when I heard that, and I was like, that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Yeah. What do you mean the lucky ones? I mean, I believe when people say, you know, the heroes are the ones that never came back. Yeah, but to say the lucky ones, lucky, and I don't know how the quote goes, so I'm gonna look it up later. But now I get it. No, it makes absolutely sense because. You know what? Now you have to live your life with all of those things, and you every day. And again, and I'm trying to put my mind in a Vietnam veteran guy to look back and to see, and not only to go through war and go through that type of hell, and but then to come back to your home and to be treated the way you were, you know, for 30, 40 years until just recently, that. Yeah, no, I get it now. The lucky ones are the ones that died in the battlefield. They didn't have to experience that.
Mike, did last night when they show that Musgrave guy, and after he comes back and he throws his medals on right the steps of the Capitol, and and you just heard Mike talk about how proud he was of the medals that he's earned, right? I mean, Purple Heart, Bronze Star, earned in combat with combat Vs and shit like that. That's a big deal, you know. And to throw them away, it's not like you can go down and buy them again, you know. And so, I mean, you can get them again, but those aren't the ones that you've been given, right? That's not the one that got pinned to your pillow in Vietnam, which is the one that's yours. And then he went home and he said that, you know, they were getting, like, I guess, mail threats and people calling the house and threatening him. And his dad said, he said, you got the right to do anything and say anything you want to say. And if they don't like it, we'll fight them at the end of the driveway. How cool was that? Right. When he talks about, you know, the feeling he got from his father, who I'm sure probably at the start had mixed emotions, and then watches his son, you know, come back, you know, confused and doesn't understand it. And then you see him grow. You see that beard in his hair, man. He grows his beard down to his.
Oh, yeah.
And his beard and his hair down to his ass. And then he goes to D.C. and takes part in that. And no, it's, don't start wars. But again, it's so disheartening to think that, you know, and I had a conversation with Justin Constantine, who's been on the program. Justin was shot through the head, okay? The round entered behind his left ear and came out the front of his face. He has been, I want to say, almost 10 years of surgery and rebuilding his face and things like that. He's a motivational speaker. And you know, you look at that, and he told me, I talked about what a hard time I have with President Bush. I said that he did that. all the shit that's going on. And then he was telling me what a great guy President Bush is and how hard he tries with veterans and how much he does with veterans. And I said, you know, I don't give a shit. You don't get a pass. You don't come back from that one. You don't put in motion the death of hundreds of thousands of people and get a do-over on that shit. I'm sorry. And I'm glad that he's doing it, but it doesn't affect how I feel. He tanked it. And so it's just frustrating. It's just frustrating for, I guess, you know, guys like Mike and I, veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, to watch this shit the Vietnam guys go through, know that we didn't learn the lessons coming out of it, and then we fucking did it again. It's disgusting to me. Anyway, we should probably talk about the NFL. It's a lot more fun to talk about the NFL than this stuff. Hold on, another email.
It's Robert Louis Stevenson. Them that die will be the lucky ones. And it was
When did he write it?
And Robert Louis Stevenson.
Yeah.
His picture looks like he's, you know, like 1800s.
Wow. You know, one of the things that was interesting last night, and Ohio Man talks about, he just writes it, except that John Kerry threw someone else's medals over the fence. You know, the other thing Kerry did was some of his testimony, I don't think, was based on fact.
No, it was bullshit. Right. Yeah.
And so that has... I think a lot of people had felt that a lot of the things that Kerry said characterized then became part of the narrative of Vietnam when that was
a lie.
When that was a lie. And
he's a lie. And he's a joke. And I'm never going to forgive that guy. Because he used that pedestal to advance his life, to his agenda.
Yeah,
you know, he was a swift boat guy in the Navy. You know, when he talks about what he, you know, just that, again, he was just a good speaker that got him in that position.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what, when you listen to that speech.
Yeah, I have no.
When you listen to that speech, you sit there and listen to it and you're like, holy shit, who is this guy? But in the middle of it, he refers to atrocities and he makes them sound like they're daily events. And the guys who fought in Vietnam, who did the lion's share of the fighting, that was not what they did, right? And you've heard a bunch of them on this program talk about, you know, their time in Vietnam, and they've never forgiven Kerry for not owning up to that and not vetting that. And then airing it out as truth. And the other thing is the whole Jane Fonda thing last night. You know what? I didn't realize that she did a lot more than sit on an anti-aircraft gun and have her picture taken in Vietnam. You know what she did to those POWs? Like how she was allowed back in the country after that shit? Amazing. Watching it last night. Calling them war criminals, saying that some of them should be executed. Could you imagine? Can you imagine if your dad or your brother was a prisoner of war, and she went? That if your dad or your brother was a prisoner of war, and she went to Vietnam, and she said that your dad ought to be executed, and he was a war criminal.
Oh, Jane Fonda.
Yeah, like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, I never watched the videos of her because I don't like her. I just didn't like her. Right. But when I saw that, when she actually said that on TV, they're war criminals. If you look into the conventions, they're actually war criminals. They should be executed, tried and be executed. Now I know why she's hated so much.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. There's another one that you don't come back from. I don't care how young she was. I don't care how stupid she was. You don't. You know, that's sorry. You don't come back.
Yeah.
You don't come back from that one. Bob Nielsen just said, I want to kiss the gunner on the mouth today. Whoa. Where's that coming from? whoa, let me get out of the way. Let me get out of the way of that thing.
No, that's okay. I don't need to be kissed on the mouth.
No, he said, I love you two guys today. No, but again, from us to you, and we're not saying that just to kiss anybody's ass. And the greatest generation, the generation of World War II, I mean, what they did was awesome. Okay, but I think Mike and I would both tell you that, I mean, combat against people in uniforms, against other nations, I mean, it's not easy, but it's easier than going into, you don't know. Yeah. You know, and then it's clean, too. I mean, it's morally cleaner, it's physically cleaner, and it's still war,
yeah,
and it's still horrible, but it's
morally good, yeah.
It's,
I mean, there's a face to evil. There's you can actually see a bad guy.
Right. And so when you see, you know, again, when you see the greatest generation, the Vietnam generation, what they did, how much more difficult when it's 1,000 shades of gray and you got to go figure it out. When your nation's not behind you, when you're not welcomed home, and then you come back and you become teachers and businessmen and you just stuff it away in the box and you become, you know, a member of your community. That's big time balls. That's a big time sacrifice for your country. And so here's another email. It's entitled Gunner! The Gunner is exactly right. Read the Swift Boat book. It's sickening. Is the Swift Boat book, is that politically biased? Was that designed to assassinate his nomination, you know, when he was running for president? Or is it fact-based, Mike? I've never read the book. I've heard, you know, I've heard good and bad things about it. Have you
read
it?
I've read excerpts out of it, but I haven't read the whole book, no.
Got it. All right.
I mean, as one person, I don't know how much facts there is. It's pretty damning.
All right. Got one more episode left tonight. If you haven't watched it, you can go to pbs.org and you can watch it. Buckle your
seat. There's one more tonight?
Yeah, there's one more. The final episode's tonight.
Mm.
Yeah, they got to put a bow on it. But and then at some point, you know what, I haven't seen, like, any of the people that are in it on doing any interviews. So, and Carl Marlanis hasn't returned my email, which is odd. So I think there's a bit of a moratorium on those guys speaking. I would love to have the Marines on. I would love to have Musgrave on. I would obviously Carl come back on. The other guy that I would love to come back on is he's a Marine, Black Marine by the name of Harris. I think he's a minister now. I mean, that guy's perspective pretty interesting when he's talking to his mom, and he says he hung up on his mom. No, you're special. You're coming back. Mom, I put special guys in bags every day. I'm not special. I ain't coming back. I'd love to have him on. I'll tell you what, the other story that they got into a little bit either last night or the night before was guys who went down into tunnels, tunnel rats.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So the smaller guys, you know, armed with a flashlight and a pistol, drop down in one of those fucking tunnels. Are you shitting me?
Yeah, the one guy describes it with very graphic detail where he talks about, you know, he killed a guy in the dark. He strangled a guy to death in the dark, you know, with his bare hands. That was his first time he killed somebody. What kind of, you can live with that for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, a lot of people have a difficult time knowing that they put their front sight post on somebody and they smoked them, or they put the crosshairs of a Hellfire missile on somebody and they smoked a whole bunch of dudes. A lot of people struggle with that. Strangling somebody?
But you know that, yeah.
Shit.
In the darkness?
Yeah.
Never seen their, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Well, Musgrave talks about sleeping with a light on. Like, his kid's saying, why do I need to give up my nightlight? Dad still has one.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he got
in the dark still.
He got issues. He's got issues. All right, man. Well, first of all, it's good to hear your voice again. The people's choice, Mike Musselman. And now since he's not watching the NFL, he's got Sunday free. So we're not going to do a show on Sunday, though. All right, man. Have a good day. Thanks.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Hey, the Yankees are only three back again.
Oh, right. We weren't talking about that, but, you know, last time I looked, they were five games ahead, so I didn't hear anything from you.
Yeah, well, no, because you didn't. Mike's been River City for, like, a few days. And so then I say, where's Gunner? He's River City. All of a sudden he's like, who are you talking about? I'm like, oh, now we're gonna play this game. All right. Anyway,
what are you talking about? Yeah.
Have a good one.
I'll see you later.
There you have it. The one and only Michael Musselman here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. We're gonna talk a little bit of food tomorrow, and then we're gonna talk something else. Let me read you an email. I'm a bit surprised, to be honest, that your attitude towards transgender is so adult-like. I did not expect that. I expected to hear something more draconian. I've been listening for a little over a week. I have to say the same relative to your stance on women in combat and the first woman infantry officer. Hey, look, I'm not going to lie about that. I mean, I love all male stuff, okay? It's what I grew up with. It's what I know. I love being disgusting. I love not having to worry about anybody else's feelings, let alone a woman's feelings. I love that. It's my preferred state of being, okay? But again, in the United States of America, if you can meet the standard, you ought to get a shot, and we'll adjust socially. And that's the way it goes. I don't know having said that, I will say this. I don't see there ever being a time when we have very many female rifle platoon commanders in the United States Marine Corps. And I think the reason's obvious. The physical requirement is incredible. We are not built the same. We are different. And the woman who would be able to do that and lead from the front and carry other people that have been shot and do everything that has to be done, that's a unique woman. It's not an above-average woman that's really trying hard. So, but again, I think, and that's, I think a lot of guys in the Marine Corps will lament the fact that, you know, we're not an all-male tribe anymore. But, right, they're grown-ups. They're smart, tough guys. And if there's a woman that can come do this and do it well, then so be it. She becomes part of the tribe. But what concerns everybody is the lowering of standards. And the playing of games. That's not a good thing. For the institution, for leading in combat, it's not good. And if then the experience is it shouldn't be integrated, then I hope that we're adult enough in this nation to say that. And say, you know what? That's just a bridge too far. So... Yeah, but, you know, we try to be grown-ups. We don't always succeed. I will give you that. But we try pretty hard. That'll do it. My thanks to Grant Newsham for coming on today. My boy Buck just chimed in from the boot barn. Bucks, yeah, if you need a good pair of boots, go online. Bucks Custom Boots. In Granbury, Texas, you can get a good pair. Swift Boat. It's written by the guy that replaced him in the unit, John O'Neill, if I remember right, who also debated him on the Dick Cavett show. I'll look into it. Yeah, all men. The only time a woman should be in a strip club is on stage. That was an email. Like we're grown up enough to accept it, you know. And I think in the United States where you do it, it's a meritocracy, right? If you earn it. I think the thing that has scared the shit out of everybody in the Marine Corps is the Marine Corps needs to be a lean, tough place. And I think our experience, when you introduce females, you introduce the whole sex thing into it, you introduce cool, and there's some places that are better off without that shit during the workday. You know, and Mike and I can both tell you, you walk in some place and you say, get your fucking ass moving. Now, I don't know that we would talk to women like that. Go, right? And there's nothing sugar-coated about it. There's a rawness and a roughness that needs to be there. Okay? And I don't know that the pointy end of the spear is as pointy with the introduction of women in number. Now, I'll make the argument that the way this happened in the Marine Corps is the optimum solution for the Marine Corps. A woman has passed. So what does that do? It means a woman can get through that standard. That means the standard's achievable for a woman. So that means the standard's been validated. Not every woman, it's going to be a pretty unique woman, but she can get through. There you have it. The standard doesn't have to come down. They can meet it. Not many will, which of course, because you're asking a woman to perform like a man does. This is not going to happen. Again, there's a reason they don't play in Major League Soccer. There's a reason they don't play in Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball has no physical contact. Why aren't there women playing there? Because they can't do it. So Major League Soccer, the National Hockey League, the NBA, why aren't there women playing in there? Because we're different. So I think you have to acknowledge that. But you can say that, hey, there may be an atypical woman who can do this, if she can do it. But they will certainly never be there in large numbers. And for the good of the nation, they shouldn't. Now, I will tell you this. One of the things I believe that you will find at the root of the Navy's problems is what I would call the feminization of the Navy. It's too polite. It's not pointed enough. It's not on edge enough. Now, we could say, well, maybe that's the fault of the guys because they've overreacted to the presence of women. Maybe. We all have to be nice. We all have to be treated. Our feelings have to account for something. You know what? Fuck your feelings. Do your fucking job. How about that? And that's the way an infantry unit is. Fuck your feelings. I don't give a shit. We have a job to do. If you can't do it, pack your shit and get the fuck out of here. I don't care. Oh, woe is me. I got it. All right? Go talk to the chaplain with that. And we'll get you the right help. But we have work to do. And I need to go spend my time with the 90% that are pulling the rope and not the 10% that ain't. And so when you lose that edge and the teeter-totter tilts in the direction of the 10%, and it tilts in favor of everybody's feelings, you're fucked. And to the Navy, 100 hours work week while you're deployed, that's nothing. You know, 3-hour watches and then doing what? I mean, holy shit. You know, can we make it easier for you? Anyway, yikes. sorry, didn't mean to get upset about that. I'm not upset, but it's just there's an issue out there, and the Navy's living it. When you lose your edge, and again, what we're talking about is crazy shit. Let's not even talk about the collision. Let's talk about the fact that a general quarters alarm and neither a general quarters alarm nor a collision alarm was sounded on either the McCain, nor the Fitzgerald. So nobody was paying attention to the extent that nobody hit an alarm. The guys are getting crushed and drowned in their racks while they're sleeping. What is that? I guess we'll find out. Have a great afternoon. This program repeats itself momentarily. Whatever you do, don't touch that dial.